was a Sunday morning, December 7th. I had been ashore. I'd been on Liberty in Honolulu the night before. And I had a 4-8 watch on the signal bridge. I was a signalman. That's visual communications, flashing light, flag hoist, semaphore, and that sort of thing, between ships that are close enough to one another for that form of communication. And I went on watch approximately 4 o'clock that morning, and a buddy of mine named Lee Ebner, he and I went to high school together, and he was in the signal gang also, and it just so happened we were on the same watch. There was nothing to do except be there and drink coffee. And Lee and I stood on the port wing of the signal bridge drinking coffee and discussing at some length the possibilities of war with Japan. Little did we know that a couple of hundred miles north was a Japanese force ready to attack us within 2 or 3 hours, 3 or 4 hours maybe. We got off watch. The 4-8 watch is relieved a little earlier by the 8-12. And so I had breakfast and I was getting ready to go ashore again on Liberty. In fact, I was going to go up to Schofield Barracks and visit some of my old Army buddies. And they had a number of different shower facilities on the ship because we had a crew of about 1,300 men. And the shower that I went to was up in the very bow of the ship on the main deck. My living quarters were second deck forward, and I had to go up a ladder. That is a term we use in the Navy for a stairway. But it's more like a ladder than a stairway, believe me. And I had to go forward through a couple or three compartments into the bow of the ship to the shower. I had taken my shower. I had with me my shoes, my towel, a bar of soap, and a wash rag. I finished my shower. I was drying myself off. There were about 10 of us in the shower at that time. And I was drying myself when the first torpedo hit the ship. And of course, none of us knew what it was. All of a sudden, there was a loud noise. It seemed like the bow of the ship raised up in the water 6 or 8 feet. And the ship shuddered and the lights blinked. And one of the guys in the shower said, what the hell was that? And somebody said, oh, probably an explosion down in a boiler room. Nothing to be concerned about. No one was excited. I tied my towel around my waist and I started aft to go back to my quarters to dress. And I hadn't gone very far when the second torpedo hit the ship. And almost immediately, over the PA system, which had not been knocked out at that time, the boatswain's mate of the watch, I think, said, now hear this, all hands, man your battle stations, the damn Japs are attacking. So to this date, I have not returned to my quarters. I headed for my battle station. Which I had to walk aft. My battle station was not on the signal bridge. It was in a secondary signal station designed primarily to hoist flags in the event that the bridge was shot away in a surface battle. And as I walked out, was trying to go out the hatch, some more Navy lingo, a hatch in the Navy is a door. As I was going out, someone was fighting me to get out at the same time. And at that moment, a Japanese plane came in from a rear, from the stern of the ship, real low, and was spraying the area with machine gun fire. So now, the guy who's trying to get out of the hatch with me, we're trying to get back in. We're fighting one another. Turned out to be the chief signalman, Pappy Seward. We called him Pappy because he was at least 35 years old. And Pappy said, Merrill, don't bother with the battle bags. That was the name of the station. Because in a battle like this, they're useless. And he was right. He said, make yourself useful doing something. So I did. A few minutes later, I saw the Arizona go into orbit from a bomb that got into their magazine. And then I assisted some sailors take down the mess tables that were swinging from the overhead. They were very heavy, and we were afraid they were going to fall and possibly injure someone. After doing that, in the meantime, there was a bomb hit the ship, came down through the foretop, through the signal bridge, through the galley and the commissary issuing room. I was standing in the door of the commissary issuing room at that time. It passed through an area about 20, 25 feet from me. Fortunately, it was a dud. It didn't explode, but the impact as it went through knocked me right on my bottom. And by this time, I'd lost my towel and my shoes, and I was stark naked. Shortly thereafter, a young ensign came in that I didn't recognize at all and asked for a 10-hand volunteer rescue party to go below decks to rescue people who were trapped or injured or whatever. So being a great volunteer, I was one of the 10 who volunteered to go down. We went down on a midship ladder. By this time, we had probably taken maybe 3 or maybe 4 of the 9 torpedoes that we eventually were hit with. And the ship, I think at that time, was possibly sitting on the bottom of the harbor. I might point out that Pearl Harbor is not deep enough to sink a battleship all the way under. The harbor has a mean depth of about 40, 45 feet, or maybe less. And the draft of the West Virginia was about 35 feet. So what we did was settle down with a port list. We were tied up outboard of the Tennessee. And we could have rolled, but we didn't because of the actions of a couple of fellows, one of whom I knew very well, a Lieutenant Claude V. Ricketts, who later was Admiral Ricketts, had the presence of mind to counter-flood the ballast tanks on the ship, which kept us from rolling over as the battleship Oklahoma did. And so we went down without any instructions whatever as to what to do except to rescue. I don't know what anyone else did, but I had presence of mind enough to conclude that I was not going to rescue any dead people. So I gave everybody a cursory examination to see if there was any life in it. Some of them were missing a limb here or there. Some of them had no outward signs of injury at all. They were either half drowned or just unconscious from shock from the explosions of the torpedoes. And what I did was I would float a body over to the ladder. And there were a couple of guys on the ladder who would take them and pass them up to the 3rd Division compartment. You lose all track of time in a situation like this. And someone's asked me, were you scared? The answer is a double yes. I was never so scared in my life. But I wasn't so scared that I couldn't think. I think it was a combination of fright and apprehension. And so I stayed down, and I have no idea how many bodies I floated to the ladder. I have no idea who they were. I have no idea how many, if any of them, ultimately survived. But I stayed until the water and the oil from our fractured fuel tanks had come up so high that I was swimming close to the overhead. And then it was getting higher and higher, and I finally had to go to the ladder myself and come up. When I came up to the 3rd Division compartment, I found out that the order to abandon ship had been long since given, and for the most part, the ship had been abandoned. There was fire coming forward from the aft of the ship. I don't know if we caught fire of our own volition or possibly from the Arizona, which was behind us. And I'm sorry to say that when I left the 3rd Division compartment, there were still some of the people that we had passed up. And when I walked out on the forecastle of the ship, the first thing I saw was the bottom of the Oklahoma sticking up out of the water. I think there must have been 20, maybe 25 people left on the ship who were able to leave. And I remember pointing to the Oklahoma and saying, what is that? And some guy said, that's the Oklahoma. Well, when we got down to the forecastle, to you landlubbers, the forecastle is the main deck forward on the ship. And the ship was so low in the water at that time, it was just a matter of stepping off the port side into a 50-foot motor launch, which was there for the purpose of picking up any survivors. And the motor launch took us over to the submarine base across the channel. Now, I'll tell you, at this time, I was from the oil. I wasn't black, but I was very brown, and I was covered with it from the top of my head to the soles of my feet, and with no clothes on. And when we got to the submarine base, we got aboard the bed of a pickup truck, pretty good-sized truck. It drove us around to the receiving ship barracks in the Navy Yard. And I walked into a building which was full of Red Cross nurses. At least they were all wearing armbands. And walking in there stark naked didn't embarrass me in the least. They couldn't identify me. And they were so busy, they didn't give a darn anyway. And someone directed me to a shower. I spent probably an inordinate amount of time trying to scrub the oil off. I managed to get most of it off. I think it took more than a week or two to finally get some of it out of my pores and out of my scalp. And they had opened up small stores, the small stores being where the sailors draw uniforms and so forth. And they issued a suit of dungarees, a white hat, a pair of shoes, a change of socks, a change of underwear, and a little ditty bag with a razor, toothbrush, toothpaste, shaving cream, and that sort of thing. And that and my life was all I had in the world.
So what transpired in the hours following that? What was the first night like? Were you under certain commands to stay put? What was happening in the hours that followed when you were starting to really regroup at this point?
Well, there were a lot of sailors in the same predicament I was in. And they were milling around, as you can well imagine, in the area. I might add at this time that we lost about 2,400 people killed and many more injured. My ship lost 105, including our captain, Captain Mervyn S. Bennion. And so what we did was we'd get into any chow line we wanted, didn't make any difference, to eat. Right nearby was the huge block recreation arena. Now, it so happens, coincidentally, that I was a Navy boxer, and I had fought the special event in the block recreation arena on Saturday night. No, on Friday night, the 5th. And they issued mattresses and blankets. And a lot of the men, if not all, slept on the cement benches up in the arena. And I don't know, I don't remember if we took a shower every day at that time or not. But anyway, that's where I slept. I met my friend Lee Ebner, who fortunately got off the ship alive too. And we hung together and we decided that, well, we'd been to high school together, we'd served on one ship together, maybe we stick together, we'll serve on another ship. Lee, incidentally, is a retired cartoonist from the Louisville Courier Journal. And I speak with him on the phone on occasion. He's doing well. Anyway, Lee and I stuck together, and I told Lee, I said, Lee, let's not volunteer for the first thing that comes down the pike. They had the PA system set up, and during daylight hours, they were asking so many men of this rate or specialty and so forth for cruiser duty, for destroyer duty, for whatever. So you just volunteer, and you get. So I said to Lee, I said, let's not be big volunteers here. Maybe if we wait, some good duty will show up. Well, after about 4 or 5 days of this, I said to Lee, I said, well, almost everybody is gone now. I said, if we don't volunteer for something today, they're going to grab us and volunteer for us. So we volunteered for destroyer duty. And we were transported over to the destroyer tender Dobbin, which was anchored out just north of Ford Island. And we spent the night there and went aboard the USS Mahan, which came in from sea the next day.